may not mean nothing to y'all, but understand nothing was done for me. So I don't plan on stopping at all. I want this shit forever, mine, ever mine, ever mine. I shut shit down in the mall and telling that girl she the one for me. And I ain't even planning the call. I want this shit forever, mine, ever mine, ever mine.
Merry Christmas to everybody out there in podcast land. Thanks for coming back. I know it's been a little while since I've done a podcast here, but the preseason podcast of the year returns triumphantly on this day, December 23rd, 2015. What's going on, y'all? This is Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Like I said, I stepped away for a little bit, and some of you may or may not know this, but I did mention this on the podcast a little while ago. I actually did sire a child, and so my firstborn son Kyan Hicks was born on December 15th, so just a little over a week ago. So I've just been a little hectic. I've been away, but I'm back now, and decided now is as good a time as ever while I'm on paternity leave. Paternity leave is pretty cool too, but while I'm doing that, I figured I could get back with y'all and record another podcast. So and we have a very, very special guest joining us on the podcast today, and of course, always want to make sure that we plug the site. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. The podcast here is available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure you check out the site. Check out what Anthony Houston is doing with the Orange and Blueprint podcast. Kenneth Hicks is also contributing to the website as well. Make sure you go pick up his book, Natural Life, available at ObeliskMediaGroup.com. And it's available on Amazon.com, and it's available in both the paperback or the Kindle form. So Natural Life is the book by Kenneth Hicks, so make sure you guys go pick that up. And of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook.com/HHS Report, so come check us out there. But again, our guest today for the podcast is a busy man who is currently running something of a shoot-around as we speak, but still took the time out to come and speak with us. This is going back to some of my Northeast Ohio ties and connections, but very, very blessed as we have been on the podcast all year and the site all year, as we've seen such growth with the website. And this is just another step in that direction. Mr. Drew Joyce II is joining us on the podcast today. Some of you may know him as the coach of Akron St. Vincent St. Mary High School boys basketball, won several state championships with Akron St. Vincent St. Mary, especially or most notably back during the years of about 1999, 2000 to 2002, 2003. During that time, of course, he had a team that featured his son, Drew Joyce III, Romeo Travis, Willie McGee, Sion Cotton, and LeBron James, as many of you may be aware. And so, Mr. Joyce, thank you for joining us this morning. Merry Christmas, and how are you today?
I am fine, Justin. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to talk about basketball and to have the time to speak with you.
Honor and a privilege. That's high praise. I appreciate that. Yeah, man. Let's just dive right in. And the first thing I noticed about, you know, just as far as what you've been up to, you're still coaching at St. V's in Akron, and you wrote a book this year. The book is called Beyond Championships, and I kind of wanted to get a feel for what made you decide to write a book. Actually, it's Beyond Championships, A Playbook for Winning at Life, and you put that out earlier this year, is that correct?
Yes, the book was released in March. Justin, what I wanted to do is just share with everyone some principles that have been very important in my life in the shaping of who I am, and principles that I've shared with players coming up, and help them hopefully, grow into men. The primary community I deal with is our teenage boys, and the driving force in my life has always been to be involved with youth in some kind of way, and this was just a great way to to do it. Basketball has been the vehicle, but the goal has always been to help boys grow into men. And so the book was written with that in mind. But the book is not just a basketball book. It's not just for males. It's a book about that I think will help anyone at any stage in their life.
Very cool. And that's, I think, a great point is that basketball coaches, you guys are teachers. That's the best coaches are teachers and people who like to teach and educate. What would you say, you know, obviously we want everybody to go out and buy the book. It's on Amazon.com as well. But if you could give us one of those principles that you kind of go into depth about in the book, what would that be?
Not a problem at all. The first one that we talk about in the book, honestly, is decisions create environment. That, you know, we want everyone to understand that their decisions count. And that everyone, you know, you need to be responsible for your decisions. And your decisions shape the environment that you're going to live in. Sometimes we don't really grasp that. We think that our decisions are kind of made out there and there's no impact. But there's far-reaching impacts in our lives. And, you know, bad decisions limit your options as you go forward in life. Good decisions create more options for you. So that's a principle that we talk about a lot here. We use the basketball game as a vehicle to share, you know, about those principles and that principle in particular. But that's just one. Another one that I believe in is mentorship, because, you know, we call it in the book the myth of the self-made man. We live in a very individualistic society, and honestly, we've kind of adopted that false belief that I've pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Well, that's just not true. It's never been true. It never will be true. We're always a part of a community, and whether we want to acknowledge those people in our who have helped us along, that's up to us. But there's always those people around who have helped us to get where we are.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it seems to be that's kind of been a theme with you, is that, you know, from afar anyways, just observing that you've always been a mentor to these young men that you've coached, even beyond just the game itself. It goes much deeper than that. It's a part of their lifestyles. You know, you care about them as people. And like you said earlier, molding young men as a whole. And now as it relates to basketball specifically, you know, this is no... you know, basketball's not anything new to you. You're not a Johnny come lately here. You know, you've been in and around the game for a long time. In fact, as I've been told, you used to play ball with my old man back in college on a little intramural squad. Is that right? The Ohio Players at Ohio University, right?
Yeah. We had a little fun playing back there in those days, and those were fond memories. Your dad. I could shoot the ball pretty well back in the day, and we had some fun with it. So that's kind of my basketball career, though. You know, I was always just a pickup guy. You know, I was never on a team, you know, coming up. I was just a pickup basketball player. I played football, but those days back at OU were a lot of fun playing pickup and in the intramurals. When I had my own children, I tried to make them football players, but they chose basketball, and I just ran at the opportunity to be involved with them.
And my old man, I know he's when he hears this, he's going to be grinning from ear to ear. But yeah, he was a pretty good shooter. We spent many days in the backyard and at the basketball court at the end of our street shooting around. And you know, he was a lefty, and whenever he would get going, you know, he would knock down three in a row, and four in a row, and five in a row, and then he would. He would move to another spot, and then he would start knocking them down again. So, you know, he was a better player than I turned out to be. But, you know, I wish I could have been a little bit better to try to carry that on. But what's really cool about your situation is your son, Drew III, is a very good player himself, and in his own right has been playing basketball for all these years, even though he graduated high school in 2003. He was actually, if I'm not mistaken, he was born a week apart from me. I think we were born in the same week or something like that. But
now, 29th of January. So yeah, there's very close dates between y'all's both birth. Yeah.
Yeah, I was the 23rd of January, and so and so now he's playing over in, is it Germany right now? Is that right?
Yes, this is year number 9 in Europe. He spent 8 of those years in Germany, 1 year in Poland, and you know, he's made a nice career for himself. This year, he's playing in the on the international team in the German All-Star, so he's a starter in the All-Star game. So, but has done used the game. That's one of the things we talk about in the book. Use the game, don't let the game use you. And he's used the game, and it's you know, not just for an education, but now it's you know, an occupation for him. And you know, same thing with LeBron. Those guys under, you know, I don't think when I was saying it back then, use the game, don't let it use you, they completely understood what I was saying. But now they can see how basketball has been a vehicle for them to, you know, not just get them an education, because that was first and foremost that they used basketball to get an education. But then it's brought them so many other things in life, and that's the great thing that you can do with sports or any endeavor. You can use it in a positive way, and if you handle it right, and if you handle it right, good things can happen. And so they've done that well with the game.
I would agree with that. And I live in Illinois now. My wife and I do. And I actually, through an organization that I'm a member of, the 100 Black Men of Central Illinois, we actually do tutor some or mentor some young men each week. And what's interesting is that these are, you know, all African-American kids, all between the ages of, say, 13 and 18. And to a man, if you ask any of them what they want to do when they grow up, they all say they want to go to the NBA. And if they don't want to go to the NBA, they want to go to the NFL. Do you think that's an issue within the Black community these days, that we kind of are focusing too much on athletics?
You know what? And yes, I do. And you know, and that's coming from a coach. And sometimes I have to be very careful, you know, that I'm not part of the problem. You know, so I make it my business to make sure that they understand that, you know, basketball is a vehicle, that, you know, use the game. But if they don't use the game right, the game will use them. And, you know, but in using the game, the first thing that you're going to use the game for is to recognize and understand life lessons. And then the next way that you use the game is to get a free education. I tell my guys here at St. Vincent, St. Mary, the greatest gift they could ever give their parents is a free college education. So, you know, we talk about that, because at some point in everyone's life, no matter what sport it is, you know, the ball will stop bouncing, and then you got to get on with the rest of your life. And if you're not prepared for that day, then life will eat you up. And, you know, but, you know, the other thing that, you know, we really talk about in the book is daring to dream. And, you know, sometimes we in our community, we've limited that dream to athletics. And, you know, there's so much more to life than the athletic field. So it's about understanding what it is that, you know, what's the dream that God has given me, and recognizing it early on, and then living that dream out. And that dream could be as yours during this podcast, and being involved in the media, and there's just so many other things that you can do, you know, that we need to maybe, you know, you play the game for the love of the game, but you know, it's not the end all be all. It's not the beginning and the end. The sports aren't, but you know, for a lot of us, you know, in our community, sports are a way out, but we have to make sure that we understand, and when we use them for a way out, that we communicate that message down to those ones coming behind us, because the opportunity for sports to be a way out is great, but it doesn't always lend itself or lead itself to a professional career in sports on the playing field. That you know, use the game, and that game may use you. It may end up that you get a career that's outside of the off the playing field or the court, and that needs to be made very clear. But that's just how important it is that, you know, guys give these young men, and what I try to do is give them a complete message. It's not just about the sport. It's about what you can do with the sport to help you to become a productive member of society.
I wholeheartedly agree. Well said, Coach. Well said. I know that, you know, my playing career, I didn't get very far. I wasn't very talented. And so, but I knew I loved, like you said, I love the game. I love sports. And I've been a basketball junkie since I was about 5 years old. And so I knew that one way or another, I had to be around the game. I ended up going to college, getting a degree in sport management. I've worked in professional sports. I've worked on the collegiate level. And I'm just now I started the podcast and the website just to kind of stay close to the game and keep my skills sharp. But in so doing, I've sharpened my communication skills verbally. I've honed my skills as a writer, which have led me to my 9-to-5 profession, in which writing is a big part of that job. And so, like you said, there's a lot of other things that you can do to keep yourself close to the game. It doesn't always have to begin and end with playing, because even the very, very best players, like, say, Kobe Bryant, for instance, he's been playing his entire life, but his career is almost up, and he's, you know, not even 40 years old. There's a lot of life left, but after 38 years old, right?
Exactly. And then when you consider, you know, Kobe and, you know, our my guy, LeBron, they're going to have those long 15, 18-year NBA careers.
Right.
The average NBA career is, what, 3, maybe 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a whole lot of life for, you know, after that basketball career is over that, you know, guys need to prepare themselves for. But you know what, Justin, it all begins at an early age in school. You know, my daughter's is a teacher, and she tells me, and something that I wasn't aware of is usually that you have to catch the kids by third grade. If you haven't caught the kids by third grade, then you tend to lose them. So, you know, as parents, as, you know, as adults, we need to understand and recognize the significance of, you know, of that early development, getting involved with those young people at a very early age and helping them to create a thirst for learning and education.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that from the standpoint of a parent as well. And as I pointed out at the top of the podcast, I'm a new parent. So because this is my first son that was born a week ago. You had the privilege of coaching your son, as we mentioned, and you've managed to watch him, like I said, pursue his dream and go overseas and play. And so it's not that, you know, the young men that I mentor, it's not that the message isn't try to kill their dream of making it in the NBA, but it's to broaden their perspective on some of the options that are available to them and make sure that they understand that getting a college education is something that should be a requirement and an expectation rather than a pipe dream, when in actuality, the NBA is a pipe dream. And the NFL, that's the pipe dream right there, right?
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. When you look at the percentages, you know, you might have a better chance of winning the lottery than playing in the NBA. I tell my guys all the time that even playing Division I college basketball, when you consider there are 300, let's just say a round number, 350 Division I college basketball teams, 13 scholarships per team. That's a little over 4,500 or something. I'm not, you know, someone else can do the math completely, but so let's say it's 4,500 scholarships for the whole world. It's not just for America, it's for the whole world, 4,500 scholarships for the world. So, you know, the numbers and the opportunities aren't that great. And, you know, kids need to understand this. And if you prepared yourself through the high school career, if it doesn't happen, at least you have something else. You are educated. You can go on and pursue something else in life. But yeah, you know, I'm a firm believer in not killing anyone's dream. I would never step on a young man's dream, but, you know, as my parents, and I'm sure yours, shared with you, and I share with my children, you know, I have four children, two daughters older than Drew and a son younger than Drew, that, you know, you have to have a plan B. If you're in athletics, you got to have a plan B, and the plan B is, it begins with the education. And for some kids, that's plan A, and that's okay. My grandson is 14, and he doesn't like sports. And you know what? I'm okay with that. He doesn't play. He's a musician, and I'm encouraging him to follow his passion with music. And, you know, whatever your dream is as a parent, you know, you need to recognize early on what it is and then try to nurture that passion that your child has. And, you know, we've tried to do that. And, you know, I'm happy to say that, you know, our children have responded well, and they're all college educated. They're all married. They're all working productive jobs. And, you know, that's a great thing. And I just want to encourage every other parent out there that, you know, that's the job. That's the requirement to be a parent, you know. And we don't have any, I was a parent, and I didn't have all the answers. We definitely made mistakes in the raising of our children. But the main thing was is that, you know, we tried to provide them a framework, from which they could spring forward. And, you know, and that's been a great way for us to inspire our children to do more and to work at it, because that's the hard part. You know, I coach so many guys who say they want to be in the NBA. Well, how much time are you spending at it? You know, LeBron James, my son, they lived basketball. That was their life. I mean, and I hate to say it, but, you know, that's how they came up. They played the game all the time. They were always working to be better. And if you don't have that passion to say, I just, you know, I guess in the book, another principle we talked about, it's discipline, not just desire, that determines your destiny. And I got that quote from a pastor, and I've tried to live that out, that it's discipline. And the kids I coach that need to make sure that I try to make sure that they understand there's a discipline required in this. And it's not just saying, hey, I want to be. We can all have a warm fuzzy, I want to be this or that. But now comes the discipline part, the work. And that's why I believe LeBron James is the best player on the planet, because of the work. He puts in the work and doesn't take any shortcuts in the work.
And we're going to talk about LeBron in a little bit. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you kind of a two-part question about your son, Drew, again, playing over in Germany. And like you said, he's on the All-Star team, which is spectacular. But one, how gratifying is it, you know, despite everything we've said, how gratifying is it for you as a coach and a father to see that he's pursued his dream to this extent, that he's been willing to travel the world and start a family in another part of the world and still pursue his dream to this extent? And the second part is, how difficult was it coaching your son and having your son on the team, being the coach's son? We don't see that. I mean, we see that at the high school level quite a bit. We don't see that, you know, in as high profile of a situation as you guys turned out to be in, or especially in the NBA situation, like we're seeing maybe with Doc Rivers and Austin Rivers on the Clippers. You know, is that something that, like, how difficult is that, or how much of a difficult situation were the two of you put in during that time?
Yeah, to answer that part of the question first, it was very difficult. And, you know, it definitely had a strain on our relationship early on. When I started coaching Drew and that travel team, and they were 10 turning 11 years old, you know, I knew he was very talented, but, you know, you don't ever want anyone else on the team, or the other parents saying Drew's playing because I'm the coach. So I was very hard on him. And, you know, as a young child, you know, the thing that you want to do most is please your parents. So, and I was never pleased. I was always about the work. I was always pushing him to do more, and I was hard on him, and it took a toll on our relationship. And, you know, at one point while he was in high school, I finally had enough sense to ask him, am I being too hard? And he told me yes. And I was able to back off a little bit and allow him to make mistakes and to grow from the mistakes, because it was bad enough to make a mistake, but then to make a mistake and have me on you about the mistake, because, you know, I'm at some point, you know, still trying to make sure everyone understands that Drew's earned, that he's good enough, and, you know, and me pushing him to be that. So after that conversation, I backed off and then, you know, allowed him to flourish. And as he went into college, our relationship it grew back. You know, I'm sure as a young child, he didn't know when Dad began and Coach Drew ended, or, you know, and it was confusing and hard. But once he got to college and I was able to step back and not then become his fan, his first call after every game was to me, and my first call after every game I coached after he left was to him, and our relationship has grown much, much stronger. But early on, it was definitely tough. And the second part of your question, how gratifying is it? You know, as a dad, you couldn't be more proud than to see your son, you know, have success and earn his dream. And Drew's, I tell people all the time that Drew and now my younger son Cameron are going to be better coaches than I ever will be, because of, you know, their passion. You know, Cameron, Drew helped me with Cameron. He really taught Cameron how to play. And as I was coaching Cameron, again, I was struggling as a dad. Cameron was a sophomore, and, you know, I needed a point guard. And I was, you know, unsure whether to allow Cameron to have that starting role. And you know, I'm talking to Drew one day, and I'm saying, yeah, I solved the point guard problem. And he said, Dad, your point guard problem solved. Just let Cameron play. And, you know, I had to do it. And once I did it, you know, he led us to the Final Four, and we didn't win the state championship, but it was our first trip back since the 2003 national championship. And, you know, he played great and handled the role. And had it not been for Drew sharing that wisdom with me, those, and me being able to receive it, maybe those things wouldn't happen. So, and, you know, Cameron is now on the staff of the University of Florida. He's, you know, working his way up. He's at the bottom of the totem pole. He's a video coordinator, but we believe that he's going to be a great coach. And then when Drew gets done, both of them, that's their chosen career. And I'm excited for them. I'm looking for the day that I can sit at the end of one of their benches.
Those video guys, those are the guys that that typically end up being somebody. It's those videographer guys. Those are the ones that end up being the scouts, the assistant coaches, the general managers. And so that's a good place for him to start off, for sure. Playing overseas is something that we've seen a few guys do as they've entered the realm of professional basketball. So, like, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay comes to mind in the NBA. He's now with the Denver Nuggets. He went overseas, I think, played in China. Brandon Jennings did it a few years before him. Rather than playing 1 year of college ball, decided to go overseas and get paid and play professionally. I want to say Brandon Jennings was in Italy or Spain, something like that. I think Italy. But what do you feel as far as the types of obstacles that kids like that have experienced and that your son has experienced? You know, how difficult is that for young guys? And do you see that being a viable option that more players are going to do as this one and done rule, as so to speak, as it's known, as that rule exists? Do you see that becoming more of an avenue?
Well, you know, the great thing about basketball is that you can go anywhere in the world and play it. There's, you know, you name a country, they've got a professional basketball league and you can go and play. So that's the great thing about basketball, as opposed to, you know, say a football where, you know, you only have the United States or Canada as an option. But, you know, yeah, there are a lot of players in Europe, in South America, in Asia who are playing now, a lot of American players. And, you know, and they're earning a good living. doing it, but you have to be able to adapt to a different culture, adapt to a different style of play, and that requires a lot of growth. And some guys have it, and some guys are willing and open to that kind of a change in their lifestyle, and some guys aren't. Because the truth of the matter is, my son lives in Germany. 10 months out of the year, he's in Germany, and that's hard on us. It's probably harder on us as my wife and I as parents than it is on him. But it is a way that's allowed him to live out his dream. And he's taken his wife, who he met at the University of Akron. They have 2 children, and they're there. And it's a great opportunity. They've seen most of Europe and throughout their, time over there. So it's been a good life. So I think it is definitely a viable option, not just for guys who want to not go to college, but guys who have finished college and don't get that NBA opportunity. There's a lot of opportunities over there if you can, as I said, handle the change in the culture. And I think that's the one thing that, the NBA, the one and done rule, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I guess I am saying this, that anywhere else in the world, you can at any age, once you are of age to earn a living, you can go earn a living. So to put in a one and done rule, I think is not fair to kids. Now, when I say that, there's, you can look at all the kids who came right out of high school and went into the NBA and were complete failures. So I understand that there's a maturity level that needs to happen, but who are we to say what that maturity level should be? If an 18-year-old can go to the service and fight for our country, we should. Why can't an 18-year-old go in the NBA and play basketball? That's my only concern with it. Now, in saying that, I do think that, there's a viable place for college athletics, and it is a great way to grow into and mature. And as we shared earlier, to get that education that honestly will probably be much more beneficial to you as your life goes on than a lot of those guys realize. So I'm a proponent of it. I just don't like that it's legislated that a kid has to go that route.
Right, and I've even heard some suggest, and I'm not saying I not necessarily subscribe to this theory, but I've heard some suggest that we see that football and basketball are predominantly black sports as far as the racial makeup of those sports at the professional level in America. And those are the only two leagues that have rules like this. NFL has a 3-year rule. NBA has the one and done rule right now. But any other sport, they draft kids right out of high school for baseball. You see tennis professionals turning pro as teens. You see golfers turning pro after college, but sometimes even before that. I mean, so every other sport, it seems like you can kind of go whenever you're ready to go. But in sports that are predominantly dominated by African-Americans, all of a sudden we got to put up restrictions and limitations. So it's just a thought. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying.
Hey, it's a good point. And I guess, follow the money.
Well, that's what they say. Follow the money and you'll get to where the answers are. Now, you did a little coaching on the AAU circuit, I do believe, which kind of led you to the job at St. Vincent St. Mary. There's a lot of negative stigma that surrounds AAU basketball, though. I mean, there's a lot of, and I think some of it is probably justified, that there's a lot of guys that are probably in that world that are probably out for themselves and maybe not out for the benefit of the kids that are playing, and they're not doing their due diligence as far as preparing them for life, as you've talked about, and they're really just trying to ride the coattails of the next big thing. Where are you as far as your opinions of the AAU circuit these days. Do you think it's where it needs to be? Do we need some type of more regulation with it? Is it something that that you think is a net positive, or something that really needs to an overhaul for these young athletes?
Well, honestly, it's become a necessary evil, if you would, if you can understand what I'm saying. Let me explain further. The way that it is being taught, you know, there's not a whole lot of teaching that's going on, honestly. All right. There's a lot of play, but there's not a whole lot of teaching. They're playing a lot of games, but they're not really teaching the fundamentals. So if I have a problem, that's the problem. When we started out with my group, with, you know, LeBron and Drew, we had a motto. And our motto was, if you teach them how to play, the winning would take care of itself. So we didn't just get together and put in plays and play games. When we had practice, and we practiced a lot, we went a lot of skill development practice, a lot of understanding the principles of the game. You know, that was, you know, that's how we went about it. And you know, we practiced 2 and 3 days a week. So that's why those guys got better. And their basketball IQ grew to the levels that it has. So I'd like to see more of that happening. When LeBron and those guys were starting out, they didn't rank the best fifth grader in the country. Now they're ranking the best fifth grader in the country, which I think is absurd. It's absurd. Yeah, because by the time that fifth grader gets to high school, he may not even be playing basketball. Or, you know, or he may be such a prima donna that, you know, he never develops into the player that he could be. So there's some issues with that, you know. But the college coaches are looking at that circuit, the travel basketball circuit, and I say AAU, and in all fairness to the AAU is just an organization that puts on a national championship, and they also are trying to do some things to help with the coaching and developing coaching, but the AAU is not all of travel basketball. It's kind of like a tissue and a Kleenex, you know. Travel basketball is necessary in that as a younger kid, Drew and LeBron and those guys, they were able to slot themselves against other guys around the country. See, oh, that guy's really good. I need to work on this. Or that team was really good. We need to be better at this. But now when you get to high school, the issue is now they college coaches, that's where they find players. They don't come to my high school to find a player anymore. They find that player on the travel basketball circuit because they're believing that those travel basketball teams are like all-star teams of high school basketball players. So they believe that that's a better feel for whether they can play at their level in college basketball. So they will then follow them through my season, but they're not coming into my gym to find a player anymore like it was done years ago. It's just much more cost-effective for college basketball coaches to go to a tournament like the EYBL, which is Nike's new league of, you know, their grassroots basketball league. For a college basketball coach, you see, it's an easy decision to go to a EYBL event and sit through a bunch of games and watch hundreds of players than to try to hopscotch around the country to find that player. So, you know, that's the necessary part of the travel basketball, is that it has left the hands of the high school coach. The high school coaches will never get it back. Travel basketball is really controlled primarily by the shoe companies, and they're not going to relinquish that, and it's not going to change. So, as I said, it's a necessary evil. I wish we could take the evil part out of it, because now you have some unscrupulous guys who are attaching themselves to certain players. The one good thing that I've seen over the last few years, which I'm excited about to some degree, is that, you know, more families are involved. When I was with taking LeBron and Drew and those guys around when they got to high school, it was just me and those guys in a van. now families are going around and they're staying closer to that gifted player. Now, that could also be negative, too, because now families make demands on coaches that are unreasonable whenever there's any adversity. Rather than helping their child grow through it, they just want to pull them off and put them on another group. So, you know, but those are the things that we have to deal with. We have to be continue to be diligent in how we go about, growing our players in our programs.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that LeBron is not the only product of St. Vincent St. Mary's that from when you were there that's playing in the NBA right now.
So, no, we have just one other player, Jakar Sampson, who he didn't graduate, but if you ask Jakar, he learned to play the game here. We're happy to say that he went here. And then Drew and Romeo are playing professionally in Europe. Another player, Greg Prier, is playing professionally in Mexico. Marcus Johnson has played professionally in a couple of different countries. So we've been blessed to have a lot of great players who've gone on and been able to earn a living for, some years playing basketball.
Right. And Jakar, I think he ended up going to another academy for his senior year, but he's on the Philadelphia 76ers right now, which is a team that's been under a lot of scrutiny of late. As a fan, just watching from afar, what's your opinion on what the Sixers are doing? Because I've had a lot of strong opinions about what that organization is doing, as from the top down, they're making no effort to really put a winning product out on the floor. What is your opinion real quick on the Sixers and what they're doing?
Well, I don't watch it enough to really make a definitive opinion. But from what I've looked at, it looks like there's a lot of youth, but there's no wisdom on the team. There's no older guys to kind of mentor these young guys and get them along. And then, I've heard some very negative things said about the GM. But again, I have to reserve judgment. I think the record speaks for itself. If you're losing like that, there's a reason. And, you keep having all these draft picks over the last few years where they've had, 8, 7, 8, 9, 10 draft picks, and you don't have it. When there's only two rounds in the NBA draft and you've got 8 or 10 picks, there's a problem there. And someone needs to try to fix it. I'm not that guy to make a definitive answer on how to get it done, but I think all of us are wise enough to see that there's something that's going wrong.
Right, right. Now, we've talked a lot, and we've had a really great conversation, and we really haven't talked a whole lot about LeBron specifically himself. I know that LeBron developed his unselfish nature as a player during his time with you, and I think I think his unselfishness on the court is pretty much unparalleled for a star to be that gifted of a scorer and yet so, selfish almost, arguably to a fault at times. But I mean, arguably to a fault at times, but he's just from the first game of his career at Sacramento in October of 2003, He's been about getting his teammates involved and about making sure that they're taken care of before he goes out and gets his own. People criticize Ben Simmons, the prodigy that's out at LSU right now. I think he was in his third game, and Ben Simmons like passed up the game-winning shot. And they're like analyzing it on ESPN, like, oh, Ben Simmons, he passes on the game winner and all that stuff. And we heard the same stuff about LeBron, which I thought was ridiculous at the time. When he was passing up some game winners against Detroit, when he was passing the open teammates and things like that. Do you think any of that criticism that was levied against Ben Simmons was fair in that moment? Or is it really just, he still is making the correct basketball play. And as long as you're making the correct basketball play and being an unselfish player, then that's the way to go.
That's how we brought LeBron up. It was always, we taught that, you're part of something that's bigger than yourself. It's about the team. It's about the group. It's not about the individual, and it does my heart, brings great joy to my heart to see LeBron continue to play the game the way the game was supposed to be played. The game is 5-on-5. It's not 1-on-5 or 1-on-4. It's 5-on-5. There are those instances where you may be in that kind of a situation, but, you know, hey, if you know, they always want to talk about Michael Jordan was the greatest walk-off, you know, if you want to call it that, the most, you know, end of game-winning shots. Well, if you ask Michael, he'll tell you in a minute, I missed a whole lot more than I made. So, you know, that there's no sense to what they're saying. The game is 5-on-5, and you have to have enough trust and faith and belief in your teammates that if you create a shot for them, that they're going to make it. And if they don't, you keep going back to them, because at some point they will, and you're going to need them. And, you know, that's the game. That's the game. It's about making good, as you said, it's good basketball plays, you know, and I'm all for that. And anyone who criticizes, you know, someone, you know, about playing the game the way it's supposed to be played is just, you know, is really just foolish. And, you know, and I think that's the biggest problem with American basketball as opposed to how the game is played in the rest of the world. In the rest of the world, the ball doesn't stick. It moves. The players are moving. It's not the one-on-one, the isolation stuff. It's about the movement of the ball and the movement of the players. And, you know, you can look at the recent championships. The last two have been those style of teams, Golden State, San Antonio. The ball keeps moving. The players keep moving. Now, and you create opportunities for a great player to make a shot, but it didn't come necessarily on his own. It came through the system of how the ball and everything was working in that player, in that sequence of movement. So
I know you once said recently, I think it was to the Plain Dealer, you said, you know, I don't care what level of coaching you're on, nothing prepares you for coaching LeBron. I know that back in high school, they played St. Vincent, St. Mary, they played Brush. I went to Brush High School. They played Brush our junior year. It was a big deal. They were showing highlights of it on SportsCenter. You had the Sports Illustrated cover. You had Kobe and Shaq coming to St. Vincent, St. Mary games and things like that, ESPN coverage and all that stuff. There was the game at CSU in senior year, which I attended that game against Oak Hill Academy. And Dick Vitale and Bill Walton called the game. I mean, it was a whirlwind. It had to be like living in a movie for you. If there was like one story or one moment from that time that just is the most ridiculous thing that people would never believe happened, what would it be?
Oh, well, that's a tough question, because there's probably a bunch of things that, you know, would fit into that category. You know, I guess, to me, you know, I think the reaction of the State of Ohio High School Athletic Association when they suspended LeBron for the two games because someone gave him a jersey, I think that was probably the most ridiculous thing, because, you know, he didn't solicit the jersey. It was a gift to him. But, you know, and the reaction was a knee-jerk reaction, because the Ohio High School Athletic Commissioner felt like our school and LeBron in particular was bigger than the sport in the state, and he was getting pressure from other smaller schools or other coaches to do something. But, you know, all we were doing was making Ohio basketball what it is. We were giving it a spotlight that it had been deserving for many years before, but didn't have, and we just were having to be in a place where we could help give that spotlight, because I just believe Ohio basketball was much greater and has been much greater than a lot of places around the country that get a whole lot more notoriety for the style of play, or, you know, so I thought, I guess if I could pick one, I think that would probably be the one.
I remember that. I think it was like a Next Urban Gear. Everybody from Cleveland remembers Next Urban Gear. I think it was a Next in Shaker Square where that happened. Yeah, right on Shaker Boulevard down there. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because I was actually going to reference that in relation to the pressure that the entire team was under. And LeBron has been under immense pressure from the time he was about 14 years old or whatever. But talk a little bit about the pressure that you were under as a coach, because I felt like it was twofold. It was one, you had to deal with quite a bit of pressure as being the caretaker or the custodian, if you will, or the steward of one of the greatest basketball talents ever. Like, this guy was presumed to be one of the great talents we've ever seen in basketball. And here he was, you know, sitting in your lap, and you were responsible for trying to mold him into the player that he would one day become, which obviously he's been a great player. But what kind of pressure was that for you from that aspect of just like, hey, I don't want to mess this up. Like, this guy is going to be something special. Like, I don't want to be the one that's responsible for derailing his career in some kind of way. And on top of that, the fact that LeBron, you know, for anybody who's familiar with his personal story, you know, his biological father was not in the picture. He had other father figures around him. But, you know, there anytime anything negative came at St. Vincent, St. Mary, or came at, you know, LeBron or the team or anything like that, it was all about, you know, there's no responsible adults in the picture. Well, where are the adults? And you know, people pointed the finger at the adults. They didn't point the finger at the kids. And you were the adult closest to the situation. So the anytime that's kind of like a veiled shot at you almost, right? So how did you deal with the pressure of both coaching a once in a generational talent like LeBron, and then also couple that with being the quote unquote responsible adult in the picture?
I guess two things. One, I made the statement that sometimes I wanted to go out in my backyard and just scream because there was no one to ask. There was no one to go to to get some help from, because we were at the forefront of so many of the things. We were the first nationally televised high school game. We were, you know, not the first, but the first one in a long time to have a kid at a 17-year-old on the front of 16 at the time. Well, yeah, he just turned 17 on the front of the Sports Illustrated. So there was no one to really for me to go to and sit down with and try to figure out what do I do. So, you know, I just looked at it as you know, something that was I was placed here for a reason, and I just trusted that you know that whatever was going to happen, that, you know, as long as I, you know, made a decision and I stuck with it, that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it would be okay. I guess the other thing that was, you know, tough on me was being a first year coach. You know, I said in my book that a lot of guys who are their first year coaching, they get to make all their mistakes in anonymity in some small gym with a few people there. Well, all my mistakes were made in front of TV cameras and packed arenas. So there was just it was a very, very tough time. But, you know, I'm a believer that if you fail and you fall forward, great things happen. And I think that that's what happened. In all my failures, I fell forward. I didn't let those failures hold me back or deter me from what I believe was the most important thing, which was, you know, growing young boys into men and using the game to help teach that and make that happen. As far as coaching LeBron, I think the one thing that was always in my favor is I had started coaching him as a 10 and 11 year old. So he knew that I loved him. He knew that I cared about him, and that my caring for him was much greater than the game of basketball. So he didn't just arrive at St. Vincent St. Mary as a freshman that I didn't know. He had been a house guest at my house for many, many a nights before that ever happened. So there was never an issue about was I going to do the right thing by him, because he always knew that whatever decision I made was the one that I had carefully considered that would be the right one for him. And, and that's just how we went about it. Did we make some mistakes? Of course. Are there some things that In hindsight, that I might have done differently, sure. But at the end of, you know, would I change anything right now, looking back? Not a thing.
I mean, I just remember from that time, just like you said, with the jersey thing and the Hummer thing with his mom, it was always something that just had, right. And it was, the stuff just sounded, it was ludicrous. Like every week it was something new with LeBron and I think he, you know, the Cavaliers got in trouble for allegedly tampering or whatever. There was that whole thing. Mm-hmm. It was a wild, wild time. I noted that LeBron, the way he's kind of progressed throughout his career, he's on this team that he's on this year, he's unquestioned leader in that locker room, obviously, with the likes of Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving and some of these other players. You know, he's always been the most talented player on any team that he's played on. But the difference now is that he's almost 31 years old, and he's one of the older guys on the team, too. And so I think it's interesting that he used to kind of defer to guys when he was a younger player. He used to defer to older players. Even when he was on St. Vincent, St. Mary, he used to defer to Maverick Carter when he was a freshman. And that was always kind of in his DNA. And now we're seeing him develop and mature into a guy who is welcoming on that leadership role. What would you say, though, has surprised you most about his career as you've watched it unfold? Like, what was the one thing that when it happened or as you saw him progress as a player or just as a leader or whatever the case, and you just stopped and said, oh, wow, that took a left turn. I didn't expect that to happen.
You know, honestly, I don't see any left turns for me. I think that the things that have happened have been thought out. And, you know, they haven't been rash decisions made. He's kept a good, close inner circle. And the maturity that we see now is just a natural part of life. I mean, when I was 21, I didn't make the same decisions as a 30-year-old. I'm hoping that I show some growth and maturity. That's just the natural process of things. You know, he's now... when he went into the NBA at 18, you can't be walking in and be a leader. You better walk in following. You better walk in trying to find out how this thing works. And now you're 31 or soon to be 31 on December 30th, you know, now, and you're the guy who's got the experience and the guy who's won a championship. You can now help these other guys understand what it takes. That's the natural process in life. And not, no matter what field you're in, no matter what that job is, that's just a natural progression of things. And if it doesn't happen, shame on you, because that's what should happen. So what I see happening is what should happen. You know, even down to the decision to leave Cleveland, you know, that was, you know, I think the only regret that LeBron would have, and the only thing that I would ever, you know, and I've said it publicly, I can say it again, is that you don't break up with your girlfriend on national TV. You know, you just don't do it that way. Other than that, the decision was the right one. It was right. He had given Cleveland 7 years to get it right. They didn't get it right. He understood that his legacy, you know, and that's how it's your legacy. It's a shame, but that's how your legacy now in the NBA is looked at, is by how many championship teams you're on. That's your legacy. So he knew that for his legacy, he had to go find a way to get it done. He did that. To come back, I knew he was going to come back. It happened a little sooner than I thought, but I knew he would come back. Because, you know, what would be a greater way to write the final chapter in a grand life than to come back and bring a championship to an area of the country that's been starving for a championship sports team since 1964. So, you know, I'm all in, and you know, we're behind him 100%, and you know, and we hope that, you know, they can get it done. But can he do it by himself? No.
We're running short on time. We got maybe a little less than 10 minutes, but I wanted to ask a couple of other questions and get your thoughts on them real quick. Now, you already alluded to this, and I know, Coach, you are super biased. And so we don't have to pretend to, you know, that you're not biased about this next question that I'm going to ask you, but I still wanted to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Is there any possibility that right now Stephen Curry has surpassed LeBron James as the best player in the world?
No. No way. No.
Why? Stephon Why Curry is that?
Stephon Curry is a product of a good system.
Woo! Okay.
He's a product of a great system that's been built around him. The best player in the world, Stephon Curry, doesn't necessarily make his teammates better. Stephon Curry is the beneficiary of what his teammates create for him.
Strong words. I see you're not missing words at all about this topic.
No, and that's nothing to say Stephon Curry isn't good, but Stephon Curry's got some major flaws in his game that teams are going to expose. He doesn't guard anybody.
Well,
he's not a great defender. You know, he's a great shooter. He's not, teams are going to start singling him out and trying to just wear him out. That's what I'd do if I'm coaching against him. I'm going to make sure you're going to have to guard someone every play, every second you're on the court. But, again, am I biased? Yes. But, when you look at the body of work over a career, Stephon is, he has a chance to be a Hall of Famer, yes. He has a chance to go down as a great player, yes. But is he the best player on the planet? No.
I would tend to agree with you. And anybody that disagrees with me, I would say two things. Number one, Stephon Curry is, as remarkable as he is, he's only been doing it on this level for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years at the most. It's going to take a lot longer period of sustained excellence to take the crown away from the king, so to speak. That's the number one thing. Number two is that I would say that Curry wasn't even all that impressive by his standards in the finals last year when everything was in his favor going into that series. And as it played out, Curry had everything working to his advantage and he still didn't play that great. That's why he didn't win the MVP in the finals. He didn't win the MVP. So, I mean, right. and you look at, you swap LeBron and Curry on those teams last summer, given the circumstances, and I don't think the Cavs would have won a game. But would you say it's fair to say that part of LeBron's biggest contribution is that he's made winning with your friends cool? Because I think that, what we saw in the More Than a Game biopic or documentary, that you played a big role in that came out in 2009, LeBron has always been about teammates and friendships. And we saw that with the team with Romeo and Drew and those guys. And then we saw that, with his Miami Heat teams, with the funny videos that they used to make and the camaraderie that you saw there. And we see it now with the team that he's on now. I feel like that's one of his biggest contributions that is pretty unsung. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. He loves being a part of a team. He just does. And he recognizes that it's a team. And, the team works better together when you're having some fun with this thing and you enjoy one another. It doesn't work with, and trust me, I had one state championship team where the guys really didn't get along. They were rivals all the way up until they got to high school and came to St. Vincent St. Mary. And their senior year, in 2011, they won me a state championship. But, it wasn't the same, so I'm not saying that you can't get it done with some guys who are adversaries, but the joy that's supposed to come with it isn't with that group. They're not hanging out. They're not friends like Drew and Bron have a lifelong, and Shion and Romeo have a lifelong friendship. Those guys didn't have that. So, it's much better when you get along and enjoy each other.
Last question. And again, thank you for joining the preseason podcast of the year, Coach Joyce. As the legend goes, I guess, this is just a story I'm going to recant or retell, I should say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, there was a process or a time in the process of making that movie, I think, More Than a Game, that maybe you were kind of, in some rooms with some celebrities and some famous people and stuff like that, and you were kind of hobnobbing, right? And somebody, there was a famous person in the room, I guess, that had recently been divorced, and they were maybe like in their early 40s or something like that. And they were telling everybody at the table, don't get married, or telling LeBron, don't get married or something like that. And as the story goes, you leaned over and you said to LeBron, the best thing you can do for your sons is to marry their mother. Why did you say that? Why do you believe that?
Because, and honestly, I said the greatest thing you could ever do for your son is to marry their mother, because that's what I believe, especially in our community, especially, with the way LeBron came up without a father. You just want that. I don't care what you say, and, our society has changed, and, there's a whole lot of things going on that makes things, makes it, okay to move on from a marriage to another. But I don't care what you say. The family unit is the basic unit that for society and for humanity. And you need a family unit. And I'm going to always be a proponent of a family unit. And, you're saying, well, LeBron was living with his wife and, that's okay. But you know what? When his sons saw him walk down that aisle and make those vows in front of people, that's something that that they're going to remember. And whether, you say, well, what happens 20 years from now when they get a divorce? Well, you know what? 20 years from now, if they got a divorce, you know what? By that time, those kids may have made that same commitment to somebody. But even if that were to happen, they saw the commitment. They saw LeBron step up and say, you know what? I want to honor you, Savannah. I want the world to know that I honor you, and you not just as a mother of my children, but as a woman that I love.
Right, right. And I wholeheartedly agree. As someone who got married a year and a half ago, roughly, I can say that it was the best decision I've ever made. So far, we're early. So far, we don't have the time in that you and Mrs. Joyce have. We don't have the time that my parents have in just yet, or my wife's parents for that matter. But yeah, it's been fantastic, and we've been blessed to bring the son into the world. And so I would definitely subscribe to that theory that was the right move. And it seems like LeBron has been happy. They had another daughter since then. And everything appears to be working out great for them, and everything's working out great for me. So that's just one other thing that LeBron and I have in common, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. And hey, the other thing about it, marriage is work, and there's always going to be work. Relationships are not easy, and you have to work at them. So my prayer is for you and your wife to always work at it, to always communicate with one another, to be willing to compromise with one another, and to be committed to one another. And, we believe those things, and I'm a Christian man, so I just believe that, you need to have Christ in the center of all that too. But, beyond that, if you have that commitment and you have that communication and you will compromise, you can make it work, but it requires work.
Powerful words from Coach Drew Joyce II. Thank you very much for joining the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast today, Coach. I want to take a quick second again to have everybody head out to the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Check out the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Again, go get the book, Beyond Championships, A Playbook for Winning at Life, by Drew Joyce II. Go get that book at Amazon.com. Also, while you're there, go pick up Natural Life by Kenneth Hicks, a wonderful book for the holiday. It's one of the best books you'll read this year. And stay on tap with Hip Hop Sports Report as everything that we do going forward. We've had an unbelievable year, unbelievable guests on podcasts, unbelievable revamp to the website. Everything has been moving in the right direction. So thank you for everybody who made that possible as we head into 2016. And Coach, there's an open invitation for you to come on the podcast anytime if you want to continue the conversation about AAU ball or whatever, the plight of the young black male, whatever. If you want to talk about the holes in Stephen Curry's game or anybody else, we can talk about that when there's a parade down East 9th and LeBron and the Cavs are carrying the Larry O'Brien trophy. Just let me know. We'll do a podcast about that. It'll all be good, man. But thank you so much for taking the time this morning and joining us.
So Justin, thank you for the invitation. I enjoyed the conversation, and I wish you nothing but success as you grow into this journey we call life.
Thank you so much, Hip Hop Sports Support. We out of here, y'all. This podcast was dedicated to the memory of my Uncle Fred Bradley. I love you. And my son, Kyan Hicks. I love you too, kid. We out of here. Peace. Merry Christmas.